You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Wednesday, we continue our discussion about Mi Lai. And Bob Nielsen joins us now. Are you there, Bob?
Hi, Michael. I'll be off the road in a minute.
Oh, you sound good. I don't know. You can't even tell you're driving.
Oh, good. Then I'll keep driving. Get across the Bay Bridge.
That's what counts in Annapolis. First of all, Bob, tell everybody when you were in Vietnam, what your rank was, where you were, and what you were doing.
I was in Vietnam, 66-67. I was based in Chu Lai. I was a company commander with the B Company First Shore Party. We essentially operated around Chu Lai.
Now, hold on. Chu Lai is Da Nang, right?
No, Chu Lai is about 70, 80 miles south of Da Nang. And Tan Chi was right in between Chu Lai and Da Nang. So we operated with the 5th Marines north of Chu Lai, and then occasionally did minesweeping on Highway 1 down about 10 miles south of Chu Lai.
Got it.
But it was 66, 67, fairly early in the war.
Okay. All right. The so in... This doesn't really surface until late 69, 1970. Do you recall...
68 when it happened, but it didn't hit the press until about a year later.
So, first of all, when you first heard it... Well, let me ask you just a general question. Your experience in Vietnam, were drugs and rape a part of what was accepted, what went on?
I never saw drugs with the infantry up front. There were drugs in the rear areas, but it wasn't terribly prevalent that early in the war.
Okay.
Alcohol was a ton of alcohol, and never really even heard of a case of rape. It might have gone on, but just didn't see it or hear it.
Okay. So the things that, the stereotypical things that we read, so just so everybody knows, Chu Lai is south of Da Nang, okay, and then and then My Lai is further south, okay, of that, still along the coast, but south of where Bob was. So the stereotype.
I think My Lai is about 70 miles south of where we were.
Okay, all right. So the things that we find that are stereotypical in your time in Vietnam, although drug use back in the rear, because that's what I've heard among infantry guys, how could you be loaded? Do you think other guys would accept you being loaded and not being able to do your job?
Exactly right. That's what I saw.
Like, I don't know about what other units, but I can tell you what if you were trying to do that shit, and we're going to go to work, and you're going to go to work loaded. That was not happening. And so, look, there might have been people doing drugs, but it wasn't anybody who was out doing with the shit that we were doing. And so kind of interesting. Did you see it though? Did you see it in Army units? Did you see it? I mean like the beads and the, because to me, the road to these kind of things is the thing gets loose. Right? The discipline gets loose. We're not here as soldiers. We're not here as Marines. We're here and we're going to figure it out on our own. We wear our uniforms the way we want. We get high. We rape, all of these things. The rules don't apply anymore. Did you see that? Did you see any of that?
Mike, you got to remember, I was there fairly early in the war, 66, right? 67. When I was with the infantry, I was attached to a really good group, 5th Marines. There were some mistakes made, but they were relatively minor. And the troops there were gung-ho, hard-charging, tough. The goddamn infantry, who deserve all the credit in the world, were the most amazing bunch of people I ever met.
Right.
Now, what happened as the war went on, leadership got pretty weak, and as I've been listening to 10 hours of your goddamn broadcast yesterday, some pretty shitty leaders got in positions, and the impact was horrendous. And but when I was there, the troops that were out with the grunts and the grunts really had their shit together and knew what was going on and were goddamn good soldiers. Now, if a really good guy in an outfit got shot, the troops reacted violently and went after the guy shooting at him. But it was nothing like the shit you heard from Milan.
Right. When, I want to talk about this whole concept of keeping your honor clean because you don't know that. You don't know these things when you go. You know, the line in the in our song, you know, first to fight for right and freedom and to keep your honor clean. I mean, that's mental health right there in our song. Because it echoes throughout this. And to me, you know, not only is the brutality, what they did to people is almost not believable. But then you live with that every day. To hear that, and to hear that soldier talk about his 3-year-old son being shot, and he knew that was his punishment for what he did in Vietnam. I mean that's gut wrenching stuff. I mean, his life is destroyed by this event. So I'm curious. When this breaks in the news, did you believe it? Did you think it was bullshit? What were your thoughts? Having been in Vietnam.
Before it breaks in the news, and I'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
One of the things I learned in Vietnam, and I've had correspondence with buddies of mine that I served with, is you learn in Vietnam to do what's right. Not necessarily some asshole, stupid order, some shithead, desk-bound officer gave, but you do what's right. And the guys in the field knew what was right and what was wrong. And the wrong ones disappeared. But that has stuck with me my whole life, that you do what's right, not necessarily what some BS order coming out of Washington, D.C. says. Now, let's go to your second part of your question. I got back from Vietnam, a station Marine Barracks, Brooklyn. I had an operation on my knee, got the knee fixed. The Marine Barracks, Brooklyn, and Brooklyn Navy Yard. And you literally couldn't go out in the city of New York in your uniform unless you went to group. And we usually would go to lunch with 4 or 5 guys, and people wouldn't mess with us.
Right.
But when I started going out with my wife about that period of time, and we were engaged and got married, and I'd come home and I'd turn on the news, and every goddamn night the press was anti-Vietnam, anti-war. And it got worse and worse, and Cronkite declared we were losing the war after the Tet Offensive, which we'd won.
Right.
And it got nauseating listening to the press tear us apart, because I knew what I'd seen and done with my own eyes. So Milai starts coming out, and what really got me upset when you started doing this program yesterday morning was Milai was in the goddamn press 24/7, for about 3 or 4 years. Every paper, every TV show had a Milai story. And you never, ever, ever heard good stories about what the real good troops are doing. Yeah, Wei Fubai got mentioned during the Tet Offensive and Khe Sanh. All the press was talking about Khe Sanh. They were all sure we were going to get our ass kicked and have to get dragged out of there. Well, guess what? We didn't. So the coverage was, you took a negative story, and I really believe the leadership problems that existed in My Lai was a very, very, very small percentage of the military. And it was a small percentage that had become cancerous. And as you could see from the interviews, it spread. So I literally stopped watching the news for almost 10 years. I've long since stopped mentioning Vietnam to anybody, but I stopped watching the news and even reading the papers other than the sports section. Because all I got was, Milai was an example of the entire military, which was total, pure, absolute bullshit. And it got distorted so out of proportion, and I just turned it off, closed it out, shut that goddamn window, and got on with my life. But I'm really thankful now. I sent you a note this morning that you replayed it, because I realized, being at Walter Reed this morning talking to some therapists, people under 50 don't even know what the hell MRI is. They never heard it. And when you tell me they weren't putting these tapes on at basic school, it blows my mind. Because if you want an example of good leadership versus bad, look at what the bad leadership is, and there it is. Pure and simple. I'm not very emotional about this.
I was going to tell you, we can actually hear you through the phone. You don't have to. You don't have to yell. And I apologize for being a topic of conversation in your to a therapist today. But no, Bob, let me just tell you. To me, you know, again, you can stand, as I've said in doing this, you could stand up. And again, the way this happened is, I'm having a conversation with a Vietnam veteran who asked me if I know anything about Khe Sanh, and I said, well, you know, a little bit. And then after the conversation, I thought, you know, what the fuck? How can you not know about that? That is one of the, you know, that's a huge event in military history.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I start reading and I start watching, and honestly, I'm blown away. But what I'm blown, part of what blows me away is, why haven't I seen this? Why didn't somebody rub my face in this? Why didn't somebody say, McNamara, this is why you need to be on your J-O-B, why you need to stand up and be accountable, why you need to do the right thing.
The military and DOD wanted to sweep that under the carpet and forget about it. The fact that only Cali was brought to court-martial is insane. I mean, found guilty. Why the hell the colonels and the generals in charge of that battalion, regiment, division, weren't goddamn court-martialed and thrown in jail? One of the generals goes on to run West Point. This is insanity. I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. They all wanted to sweep it under the carpet. And I mentioned to you yesterday that about 1983 or 84, one of my wife's cousins came out to visit us in California, and a buddy of his who graduated West Point a year or two before came with him. And we were talking and shooting the breeze, and I said, what'd they teach you about being West Point? He said, they never taught us anything. Can you believe that?
Yeah,
now, this was in the late 70s, early 80s. But the whole DOD decided, we're going to make believe this never happened.
Well, no, you want to know something that's interesting. I joined the Marine Corps in 1983. I get to the fleet in 84. And, you know, one of the things so anybody who has 10, 12 years in the Marine Corps, so every staff sergeant, every captain major, they're all Vietnam guys, right?
Right.
And so you see their pictures, but we're not allowed to wear bush covers and we're not allowed to wear jungle boots. The jungle boot is one of the great invention that comes out of Vietnam. The way the sole that was kind of cut at an angle, not the Vibram sole, which I thought sucked, but the one that's cut at an angle with spikes, kind of spikes around the edges of the sole, that is a great boot. They dry out quick. You can grow up hills and shit like that. But the Marine Corps is having no part of it. Bush covers, same way. Best field cover that you can wear, can't wear it. And Marine Corps was not a whole lot different, and then we didn't certainly have My Lai in our background, but the Marine Corps was not embracing a whole lot of Vietnam at the time either, and you know, and the military DOD wanted to get the hell away from it. What's it like as a Vietnam veteran? Because you guys are all, are you all, let me ask you, are you all stained by that?
I wouldn't use the word stained,
okay.
But like I said to you this morning, listening to the goddamn interviews this morning, and listening to that professor talk with the retired colonel, at point my blood was boiling, and at point my blood turned to ice water. The problem was we never got a true picture back here of what our military was doing, despite of the bullshit leadership from Washington, D.C. And so it was a very distorted Hollywood version of what we were doing. And I think the way I survived it was essentially lock it up in a shoebox, put it back in my closet, and for 40 years not think about it. Remember, Michael, I couldn't put it on my resume when we were going after a project with Turner Construction. I couldn't put it on my resume till the mid-'80s that I'd even been in the Marine Corps, much less to Vietnam. You couldn't talk about it.
So you left that off?
Now, that's insanity. That's 20 years you got to blank out of your life.
What'd you put in your resume? How'd you fill those years? What did you do? Say you were in college?
I left it blank. I went to college, and then I joined Turner Construction. Left the active duty 4.5 years out of the picture.
Wow.
And that's insane. And the proudest thing I should have ever been talking about was being a captain in the Marine Corps. So, you know, we all just...
Okay, so let me
show on the carpet.
What year did you then put it back into your resume? And what made you do that?
Well, what made me do it was watching the Vietnam Memorial be put together in the early 80s. And the Vietnam Memorial came out, and there was a moving wall demonstration out in California before the Vietnam Memorial was even completed. And I kind of said to myself, fuck it, I'm going to start talking about it. And literally the whole country started talking about it. The Vietnam Memorial opened, and then 2 years later they had the dedication of the other two statues there, and then the woman's portrait. But people finally started talking about it.
Hey, how did you feel about the initial wall? Did you like it or not like it when it was came out? Because there was no small amount of controversy about the wall itself.
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of people that wanted a big bronze historic statue with people on a horse and a big lance.
Right.
I, having been in construction and architecture, knew something about it, looked at the initial drawings and said, this is going to be unbelievable. I snuck through the fence one night about midnight when it was under construction.
Nice.
And before the granite was up, and I walked down with a cab driver and we looked at it. And I said, this is going to be pretty good. And it was still all mud and dirt and everything. And I wasn't at the opening. I didn't get back till a few weeks later. But I walked there, and I walked down the very first time and said, this is like walking in a cathedral. I said, all of a sudden, the road leaves, leaves.
It's way
there.
It's way different than a cathedral. It's
And it's, you start, yeah, but you start, your attitude and feeling changes as you walk down there.
Oh, my God, it's amazing. At the bottom of it, it's just silence.
I started looking at the book that they have there, and started looking for guys in my outfit. I finally rode away and got from DOD a roster of my entire company, and checked every name in the company to see who'd gotten killed after I left. But the thing was, to me, it reads as a diary. It doesn't read as a wall. It reads as a diary because I see guys that were on the boat ride over with me that got killed.
Right.
Camp Carroll, Latin Marine captain, was with us on the boat going over. And then you read operations you were on where guys you knew got killed, plus guys you didn't even know. And then it continues for another, 100 panels. So it really opened America's eyes to what everybody has stuck their head in the ground and wanted to make believe went away. And I bought many architect friends down there that were really well-known international architects saying this is the best piece of design ever done in this country. Now, the controversy over it was more emotion of the people that had been there in Vietnam in different roles. And I can almost understand the controversy now because it's radically different from the guy on the white stallion, with the bronze statue. And to me, the Vietnam Memorial, it just talks to me. I've been there a couple hundred times. I like to go early in the morning, like 5 o'clock.
Right.
And, I think I've told you that every asshole in Congress and the Senate ought to be made to walk down there one morning a month at about 6 a.m. because before you decide where we're going to be sending troops, you're going to be thinking about that place.
Bob Nielsen, moderately animated today, as we talk about the Mulan.
I'm going to get my blood pressure checked right now.
you'll break the gauge, for God's sake. Let me read you an email. It's entitled, Stoned. Oliver Stone admitted in his Playboy interview to being stoned during the action that led to his Bronze Star douchebag. I see that stuff, and it's like, how do you do combat if you're drunk, if you're loaded?
Ask Carl Milanis that,
yeah.
Or ask Jim Webb, or ask Tim Maxwell that. Come on, guys. You can't fight those kinds of battles and be stoned.
No, it's, you know. No, you're right. It's so in thinking about it, and that's why, you know, it's so popular. Hold on, let me read you an email. Wow, Mac, gut-wrenching doesn't come close. We had a dear family friend who was over there serving around this time. He wasn't involved in this massacre, but what he did see and was involved with, it affected him for the rest of his life. He struggled with emotional and mental health issues all his life, and they were directly related to his service over there. He never, ever spoke about it, but he would have random breakdowns, many of which I saw. It was like he was right back over there, experiencing it all over again. During these breakdowns, he'd cry and scream and shake. He spoke of shooting people, shooting children. It was absolutely horrible. It broke my heart to see what he was going through and to hear the stories of what had been done. He'd go on sometimes for hours. He never got violent during these breaks, thank God, but his wife would just hold him in her arms as he cried. And then he'd come to himself. He'd usually just go back into his bedroom and wouldn't come out for a day or two, sometimes longer, almost like he was embarrassed to have had someone witness what happened to him. It was terrible. You know, I guess the underlying point of this is not the study of Mulan, but it's, to me, this is incredibly powerful stuff that you won't get out of your head. And it's what young Marines need to see. There's a reason to keep your honor clean. There's a reason to do the right thing. And it isn't simply to follow the rules.
And Michael, there's another piece to your story that's so important that nobody talks about. Thank God, the people like Norman Schwarzkopf and Joe Hoare and Barney Barnum and people like that stayed in the military and glued it back together after Vietnam.
Right.
And I mean, there could be a list of 100. But they allowed...
Hey, who was the commandant? Who was the commandant? I screw this up all the time, and I apologize, but who was the commandant that opened the gates and said, get them all out of here? I don't care if it's me and my driver at the end of the day. We're done with this. Who was that? It wasn't Barrow. It was Lew Walt?
No, Walt wasn't the commandant. I'm not sure. I don't want to give an answer and then be proved wrong. But, you know, keeping the ability... It was Walt and Krulak that understood what the hell was going on in Vietnam and kept a great cadre of fabulous military leaders to stay on in the Marine Corps. And there were some good ones that stayed on in the Army. And they got rid of this goddamn cancerous bad leadership and got it back to where we have the Mattises and Joe Dumfords and people like that nowadays. And they're the ones that deserve enormous credit. Barney Barnum's a classic example. People that stayed with it when, you know, you couldn't even get people to apply at West Point or the Naval Academy for a while. People didn't want any part of it. And nobody talks about that.
Wow.
And the incredible military we have today, which we've run ragged in the last 16 years, is thanks to people like that. And they were training the right things. And there's programs like Knowing About Meli and What Was Ugly About It, combined with Zinni's speeches and what he teaches at basic school, that's where you're going to make good leaders. And you got to know what to do, what's right, not what some asshole colonel has told you to do sitting behind a desk. Excuse me for being tough on colonels.
They deserve it. They're senators, for God's sake. The senators of the Marine Corps. They deserve to be backhanded. Let's see. I think it was Lou Wilson.
Yeah, well, Green was a commandant when I went in, and then Wilson took over.
Wilson was a commandant from 79, so what do they serve, 4 years? So
yeah.
75 to 79. I think it was Wilson that was the one who said, get him out of here. And the Marine Corps' end strength dropped, but it began the cleansing.
Because the Marine Corps really disappeared in the early 70s.
In the early 70s, exactly. You know, guys like that who helped put it together, but amazing. You know, if I asked you, as a Vietnam veteran, what is the lesson of My Lai, what would you tell me?
Poor leadership is cancerous. Get rid of it the minute you detect it. And you can't ship them far enough away, because poor leadership will contaminate everybody around them. And we don't pay enough attention to that peacetime. Remember, we've been at peacetime from the Korean War all the way to Vietnam. So we had people that had been in the Marine Corps 15, 18 years, never seen combat. You could be a great desk jockey and not have an iota of leadership. Leadership is being in front with the goddamn troops and doing what's right.
It's pretty astounding. It's pretty astounding, Bob. You know, I mean, if you can imagine getting reports like that and saying, it was the whole thing is just horrible.
Can you think of how many hours were spent trying to cover this up? At the, you know, the battalion, the regiment, the brigade.
At the division.
They must have spent 10 million hours covering this up.
At the division level, there was a conversation about it, and it was just like, and the report back from the battalion was some civilians, 20 to 28 civilians were killed in the LZ prep, maybe a stray artillery round, and then got caught in the crossfire between small arms fire between the VC, who were not there, and Charlie Company, first battalion of the 20th Infantry Regiment. And so that was the first. And then what happens is it gets outside the battalion, and it comes to the division headquarters from the aviation guys who, you know.
Oh, thank God that helicopter pilot Thompson was there. Thank God.
How about the balls that guy had?
He should have gotten the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Right, and the story, and I've said it a couple times, but his door gunner was 18 when he walked by him, and he says, you know, he walks to the lieutenant, and he says, how do I get those people out of that bunker? And the lieutenant says, with a hand grenade. And so he just turns around and walks away, and he walks by the helicopter, and he says, I'm going to go get those people. If they shoot on those people, you shoot them. And the door gunner's 18 years old when he gets that command.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, it there's so many things you can learn from this that as much as I was gripping the steering wheel driving in and listening to the podcast from yesterday, there was so much it brought back. It brings it back into focus. And they ought to be using that same tapes 100 years from now.
You know what, Bob? Absolutely. And again, the question I asked was, why didn't I see this? Why didn't somebody say, This will put a dent in that monkey McNamara's head. Even the dumbest among us, right, cannot miss the gravity of this, right? And not only how it gets sideways, what Medina says, there's no questioning of this by the non-commissioned officers or the staff non-commissioned officers. You got a lieutenant who's on an M60 machine gun who's shooting people in a ditch because the Hispanic soldier that started out the first time doing it quit and wouldn't do it anymore.
And then
the lessons are, as you know, you see these guys as they age, they never get away from this.
And then part of the interview yesterday where Secretary McNamara goes back to North Vietnam for a few months to study what happened 40 years before, and he realizes we didn't understand the enemy. I almost drove off the road.
Yeah, I should have probably edited that out.
Well, you could insert the name Roosevelt. Same thing.
No, you're right. Right.
Exactly right.
Arguably
Roosevelt. Arrogant.
American arrogance. Yankee arrogance is, yep. I think, what Hackworth calls it.
I'd be very interested for you to have the same conversation with Carmel Anthus and Barney Barnum.
Trust me, I'm trying to track people down, and just because to me that's what was their Vietnam like? And again, Vietnam was different depending on what year you were there, and what part of the country you were in, you know, defined who you were fighting and whatnot. And so I'm curious what they encountered, how they encountered it, and whatnot. And you know, Bob, one of the things that is incredible when you hear this stuff is raping people while we're on patrol. What?
Oh, unbelievable. In a combat operation in the middle of it.
Yes. And that's why I'm curious, you know, you know, because those guys are honest to a fault. You know, they'll tell you the truth. They don't sugarcoat anything for you. And was that something? And I just, it's like, you know, how do these things happen? Well, how do they happen in every military? You have weak leaders. You have weak leaders. And they do this kind of stuff. But for me, it's been absolutely astounding. But again, it's to the Marine Corps, right? If you're on active duty and you're listening to this, you know, all you got to do is get your Marines together and show them this stuff. It's a couple hours worth.
Get your platoon or company together and go sort for an afternoon. It'd be every bit as good as listening to Zinni's presentations.
Well, and again, and then when you listen to Zinni's and you hear him talking about he goes to Vietnam for his company commander tour and he sees somebody with scalps in their cover.
Yeah.
He grabs.
Stops the shit.
Right. But his comment to me is one of the things that's most interesting, and then he says somebody showed him some photos of some mutilated bodies of women and other stuff, and he grabbed them and he said, you burn this shit right now. And he said, and you know, when I did that, you know the look I got?
Almost applause.
Right. What you're expecting is the hate look? No. The look I got was a look of relief. They were glad I did that. They didn't want to be doing this. They know, and what's interesting about the My Lai thing is they do it, and almost instantly when they're done, they know. Medina tells them never to talk about it. Okay? Do not speak about this. And then when inquiries start to get made, you know, they get told again, hey, nobody needs to talk about this. But you can't clamp that boil, right?
The impressive part is some of the privates and Lance Corporals and Corporals that were in the interview, they knew exactly what was right and wrong. They were open and honest about it.
Right. You know, it's interesting that there's different people who say, I wouldn't do it. You know, there's a black soldier
Michael,
from Arkansas, and he says, look, Callie told me to do it, and then he said he'd court-martial me. And I said, well, you go ahead, but I won't do that. And then you have NCOs that are trying to sell an order's an order. We get raised to follow orders. No, not unlawful ones. And we were told everyone there is either a VC or a VC sympathizer. Well, what is it? What does VC sympathizer mean? Does that mean a Taliban sympathizer? Because that's a civilian. Does that mean an Al-Qaeda sympathizer? Because that's a civilian, too. Are there open season on them? Come on.
There's another very important part of this discussion, Michael. I believe, having watched Vietnam veterans over the past 50 years, because it was 50 years ago this summer I got back from Vietnam, I really believe that the emotions get tougher as you get into your 50s and 60s and 70s of what occurred during combat.
Why?
We have more time to think about.
Right.
And we need the places like Boulder Crest and things like that to help veterans deal with this issue, and we're going to need it more and more because we got a whole cadre generation, two generations of veterans now that spent the last 16 years in combat, and 50 years from now, they're going to be getting old.
How old are you?
I'm 76.
Okay, so you're 76. Have you finally got your hands around this shit? Do you finally have a grip on it?
All until all Marine radio came along, I just buried it. And you fucked up my brain completely. No, but it was needed. You were brought back from that damn many memories, I can't even tell you.
you're welcome, by the way.
We needed that.
So the bottom line is at the age of 76, you're still working on it.
Oh, shit, yeah. In fact, my doctor... Last night, I went into a book club meeting where we were talking about an Air Force female captain that ran the officers club in Thailand during the peak of the Vietnam War. And she wrote a great book, and it was very open and honest, and a lot of it applies today. But I'm sitting there talking, and around this table, eight of the people had never been anywhere close to the Pacific Ocean, but there was a wife of an Air Force pilot was killed in Vietnam, and there was me in the Marine Corps, and there was a Navy vet. And it was astounding, you know, we're in our 70s talking about these experiences. But we need to pay attention to that, and that's why we need things like Boulder Crest and that kind of concept, Tim Maxwell's farm down in Virginia, where vets can go to share with other vets the bullshit. It's an important part once you're out of the service, and you can't just go down to the American Legion and drink beer. Not that I'm opposed to that.
No. Let me read you an email. Mac, is it me, or is Nielsen the only person that calls you Michael on this show? No, that's a fact. It's like my.
Well, I learned that from Michael's mother.
It's like my mother talking to me, and Michael, I'm like, oh shit. That's a fact. Nielsen's the only one that called me by my first.
My son's name Michael. That's why.
Here's another email. Mac, on a serious note, I'm probably like you in that I knew some about it, but honestly, I had no idea. Thank you for rubbing the rest of our noses in it. I agree with you. I wish somebody had rubbed my snout in it while I was on active duty. It would have certainly brought the lessons of those law of war classes that I doodled in and then walked out of not knowing shit. Thanks for doing this. I intend to do some more reading about My Lai because I honestly can't believe some of the stuff that came out of it. One of the things that's sticking with me is that fucking Captain Medina's statement afterwards. It's unbelievable. He was there. He saw it. And he had the fucking balls to tell fucking lies in front of a camera to everybody. And can you imagine the reaction of his soldiers when they saw that across the country? They must have looked at it and said, hand me another beer or a joint. I need to get drunk because this motherfucker is a lying piece of shit. Enjoy the program. Tell Nielsen to take his medications and stop screaming.
I knew this was going to be tough.
Hey, take your medication, motherfucker. Man. No, it's true. It's honestly, it's like, and then to hear Callie wrap himself in the flag, and I valued my soldiers' lives more than the lives of the enemy. Oh, you mean those little kids and those old people you mowed down, you piece of shit? That enemy? And you're just like, you got to be kidding me. Absolutely. No, but let me tell you, first of all, thank you for the email. It is certainly a puzzling question why we, the Marine Corps, as an institution, to me, every leader from NCO school, staff NCO school, you ought to have to see this stuff. And because it teaches so many lessons. One, the law of land warfare, why it's important, why it's significant. Two, the mental health piece. You're going to live with this forever. Fucking one of you. You have a moral obligation to intervene for two reasons. One, it's what we pay you to do. Two, you are rescuing people from doing the wrong thing that will ruin their lives. And if you give a shit about them, you've got to do that. Because you're a leader, and that's what leaders do. And so to me, it brings it all together, and it's not some theoretical bullshit class. It is in spades this. And I'll tell you what, and then when you listen to the Vietnamese villagers that survived, and you hear them talking about what they witnessed, what they, you know, the rapes, and then somebody sticking a K-bar into a young girl's vagina and ripping it out? Like, what in God's name happened? But if you don't think that could happen again, given similar circumstances and horseshit leadership, then you're wrong. And someday you might be the leader that's zipping around in a helicopter. Do you have the balls, you know, do you have the balls to be that guy to land and do the right thing?
Yeah, exactly right.
Do you have the balls to be Hugh Thompson? And
you've got to do what's right. You've got to do what's right, and that's lived with me my entire life, back in the construction industry and building buildings all over the world.
Well, and I will tell you this. Even if you do the right thing, you're still going to struggle with it. It's because it's not easy.
Oh, yeah. Because
it's not easy. The worst fate in the world is the fate that you hear that soldier by the name of Simpson. He can't get away from it. He did the wrong thing, and he can't get away from it. There's a story, and it wasn't in here, but Callie's radio operator, the following day, Callie tries to take his platoon into a minefield. The squad that's on the point refuses to go into it, and, you know, evidently Callie couldn't read a map, and he was an idiot. And so Callie says, all right, I'll go. Follow me. Nobody follows him except his radio operator. His radio operator steps on a mine and has his foot blown off. And as he's being medevaced, he's screaming at Callie, God got me for what we did yesterday. He'll get you. And this is less than 24 hours after Milai that they know. What they did. And again,
they know an hour later.
You live with it for eternity. So to me, it's powerful stuff, and it answers the money. So why don't you intervene at Parris Island when a drill instructor's calling a recruited terrorist? Why not? When somebody goes to urinate on a body, why don't you stop it? When somebody says, let's drag that guy to his house and kill him. You know, because look, you're not just saving that guy. You're saving them. You're saving your fellow Marine. That's who you're saving. So, no.
Or blowing up a house when you don't know who's in there. You know, that's just stupid shit.
No, trust me. I mean, that freezes me because I've had people that want to do that. You get somebody killed, and everybody's blood is up, and everybody wants to kill, right? When you get guys killed and you go through that shit, and then somebody says, yeah, we followed him into this house. Okay. And then what happens is there's another, you know, small arms engagement. Somebody gets shot in the head. The unit that was at the house now leaves. All of them leave, and all of them go on this medevac, this CASEVAC, via ground. Okay? So they lose what we call PID, right? Positive ID. Now, 20 minutes later, another group of Marines shows up. Now they have eyes on the house. Now they're getting ready to drop, you know, ordnance, you know, aviation ordnance on the house. And I'm watching their conversation in a chat window. And I pick up the phone and I call down there and I said, hey, you can't drop on that building. And the guy, you know, the captain's like, sir, what do you mean? I said, you lost positive. You have no idea who's in that building. You have no idea if the guys who went into the building are still there, and you don't have any idea if there's civilians in the building. You can't drop on that. And then the commanding officer, who I won't name because he's still on active duty, he's a dumbass, and I knew him as a lieutenant. He was a dumbass then. He picks up the phone. He says, Mac, are you ordering me not to drop? I said, sir, you're the commanding officer. You know that you have the last say. What I'm telling you is you lost PID. You have no idea who the fuck's in there. And we both know you can't drop. And if you do, that's outside the rules of engagement. And if something bad happens, it's on you. And I want you to know that you know, I wouldn't say the colonel's name. Colonel so-and-so is going to hear about this as soon as I see him. And he goes, oh, what are you going to tell me? I said, no. I want to make sure that he knows what's going on. That's my fucking job. So you do what you think you should do. All I'm telling you is you know the rules of engagement. And he says, hey, I got it. I don't need a lecture. I said, very well. And he hung up, and he dropped it. He dropped the building. And thankfully, there was nobody inside of it. But he didn't have any fucking clue. He was pissed.
He wrote you a nice fitness report.
No, my colonel did. I told my colonel, you know, it was outside of Fallujah in 2006.
Yeah.
And this stupid son of a...
What you were doing was right. See, that's the important thing. You were doing what was right. Not necessarily what rules of engagement said, what was right. It made sense. You're not going to drop a goddamn building when you've lost control of it and no one who's in there.
Well, and the conversation went like this. He said, look, I can drop. I said, no, you can't. I said, what you're going to have to do is sit on it till the sun comes up, right? Send more guys down there,
yep.
Right? Coordinate and go in and yoke their asses up. That's how we do it. He's like, hey, I don't need a lecture on my job. And I said, okay. You know, hey, shit like that. It, you know, and what it is, Bob, in my opinion, it's stupid guys in over their head. Callie's in over his head. Callie's in over his head, and Medina's in over his head. And then they try to hide behind all this bullshit and tell you which way is up, which way is down. And it's just absolutely. And again, if you don't have it, and again, what's sad is if you don't have the balls to call bullshit on them, then you have to live with it. You have to live with it. So you know.
Agree completely.
Yeah.
Let's say something positive for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Turner's still looking for 30 or 40 combat veterans, male, female, any branch of service, officer or enlisted. Career opportunities. We've got three that they're working on right now, and there's another three supposedly going to be coming in the pipeline. So keep paying attention if you're interested in the career opportunity.
Turner Construction is looking for leaders. You don't have to know shit about construction. If you can lead a small group
worldwide.
Yeah, if you can if you, and again, it's not, you're not talking about a job here. You're talking about a global company that's looking for veterans with leadership experience. Okay? That's what they're looking for. So look for
commercial. Get an email to me. Get an email to me, robertn802@mac.com, and I'll get it in the right hands of Turner.
All right. Or you can just send it here to live.almaryradio@gmail.com. It's on the website. Get word to Nielsen. Get word to me. You can also find them through the 100 Entrepreneurs website. You can you can contact them. Just get us something, okay, and then we'll put the rest of it together and touch the wires and do all that shit. But good stuff. First of all, I want to thank you for coming on today. I know that, this is not an easy subject for Vietnam guys to talk.
I was hesitant. Come on.
Well, no, I liked it. No, what I liked was that, you know, that you composed yourself and you came on in a very measured way and then lost your fucking mind screaming and yelling.
Well,
screaming and yelling at me.
6 hours of listening to your patience than anybody.
It's amazing, isn't it? Honestly, it is.
Unbelievable.
It is amazing. And to me, the sad part is you had young soldiers that depend on leaders to do the right thing, right? And I can understand when, no, I can't even say that. I mean, they're the most vulnerable because they don't know shit. They believe stuff like it's an order. It was and you hear that yesterday you heard these things. We were given an order. It's an unlawful order. It was a free fire zone, but not on civilians, you dumbass. You know, I mean, you hear this shit, and that's how they validate it and justify it, because they don't know shit. They're not professionals yet. They haven't been in that business long enough. They're just rookies, right? And in its own way, they're victims. Now, at the end of the day, they have to be accountable because what their transgression was so far beyond, you know, what they had any right to do in terms of being in combat. They should have known. And some of them did and refused to participate. But for the rest of them, those guys needed leaders, and from squad leaders to platoon sergeants to platoon commanders. Callie's the only one that gets mentioned. What about the rest of the fucking platoon commanders? Why aren't they just as famous? What about the executive officer? You know, all the rest of that shit. What about the first sergeant? These guys are all leaders. Like, where the fuck were they? So, anyway. All right, sir.
Where were the colonels?
Yeah.
Okay, and don't go to Callie's jewelry store down in Georgia either. I would not recommend that.
No.
Great job, Michael.
All right, sir.
Good you brought this up.
All right. Thank you for the visit.
Take care.
There you have it. The one and only moderately agitated Bob Nielsen. Another email. I read your little tease yesterday on Facebook, and so I decided to listen. When you said at one point that what you're going to hear will literally drop your jaw to the floor, in retrospect, you weren't kidding. I just want to echo your comments. If you want to instill a sense of urgency in leaders, they should listen to this. I completely agree with you, Mac. I never was exposed to this, and I wish I had been. It certainly would have changed the way I thought about the law of land warfare. It certainly would have changed the way I thought about post-combat related mental health, because in the last hour of what you did, hearing those guys agonize all these years later over something they can never get away from is a great lesson for all of us. Appreciate the program as always. Well done. Just know this. This isn't over. I just want to turn the kaleidoscope on this thing. And to bring in guys who served in Vietnam and get their thoughts on this. How did it impact them? What was the environment that they led in? Does that make sense? What was that environment like? Was rape acceptable? Was shooting civilians acceptable on a Wednesday, hump day? That'll do it. Thanks for listening. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, tell your friends about us. I'll post this audio. Pretty powerful stuff. I think it's certainly the food for PME. Were it in my power, I would make sure that this became a case study PME for every leader in the Marine Corps. Because it transitions you to the post-combat related mental health, to the mental health question. Why you got to do it. Why you can't shrink. Why at the point of confrontation when somebody says, hey, fuck you, get out of here if you don't like it. You can't leave. Can't do that. Have a great day. Yankees made a big trade yesterday. Yeah. The Gunner and Montana man, I mentioned it today. And they want no part of that discussion. Not sure why. Bastards. Anyway, have a great day. This program repeats itself within seconds.